Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. A recent survey caught our attention. The results were released earlier this month, and they show that those people who are in the age group of 18 to 33, which I guess we classify as the millennial generation, are plenty stressed, and it's not going up. Stress levels for most Americans have taken a downward turn across the country, except for this age group. And our guest this hour says millennials are growing up at a tough time. They were sheltered in many ways with a lot of high expectations for what they should achieve. Individual failure is difficult to accept when confronted with a sense that you're an important person and expected to achieve. Even though in most instances it's not their fault, the economy collapsed just as many of them were getting out of college and coming of age, that does lead to a greater sense of stress. Mike Hayes is our guest this hour. He's co-author of Millennial Momentum, How a New Generation is Remaking America, and Millennial Makeover, MySpace, YouTube, and the Future of American Politics. He's also a partner in Mike and Morley and a former president of research at a media market research and consulting firm. This is also the generation that, during their very formative years, saw the buildings collapse at the World Trade Center, a fight against terrorism, and a recent round of horrendous shootings in various places in the country. I'm interested in how that has affected their sense of a well-being and whether or not they think the world is a very dangerous place, which can also, I would think, add to high levels of stress. We'll be welcoming phone calls for Mike during the course of this hour, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, email talk at WPR.org, and our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Hello, Mike. Thanks very much for being with us.
Well, thank you, Kathleen, for having me on your program.
Our great pleasure. Is it mostly the economy? We hear that that's front and center always. Is it because people in this generation are just having a hard time finding jobs?
Well, the economy is certainly a big issue for this group, particularly for the portion of the group, for the roughly at this point two-thirds of the group that are in their 20s and have reached the early 30s. And would be in college, and of course many have now graduated from college, and they would be trying to find jobs maybe for the first time in their lives. You know, it's an interesting thing. The generational theorists, those who study generations, say there are four types of generations that cycle throughout American history. And the millennials are the type of generation that they refer to as a civic generation. They're a group-oriented generation. Raised in a manner that is sheltered by their parents. The last generation of this type that occurred was back in the 1930s and 40s, the GI, the greatest generation, who experienced many of the same things that the millennials are experiencing today, a collapse of the economy after some period of prosperity, and a concern with foreign affairs that maybe they didn't want to have because of things like 9/11, terrorism, things you mentioned earlier. So, yes, the economy is a big factor for this generation, but there are other stresses that they are going through as well.
Mm-hmm. And yet that civic generation, the greatest generation, had a chance to become heroic and to take direct action at the risk of losing their own lives because of World War II. This generation does not have that. What does that mean?
Well, they, first of all, of course, the people, the young men and women who are, for the most part, fighting initially in Iraq and still in Afghanistan, as well as in a few other places around the world in much smaller numbers, are, in fact, the people who are serving in the front line. So you're right, it is not, while it is not a huge majority of the generation, virtually all the males in that generation, the greatest generation, served in the military, and it's a much smaller percentage, maybe only 1 or 2% now. They are still the troops, but the millennials are challenged, and they, even though they may not be winning the war, they did elect the president twice. It can be certainly made, the case can be made that, particularly after the last election in 2012, the millennials accounted for four different states that if Barack Obama had not won, I think Virginia among them, that if Barack Obama had not won, he would not have been reelected. So they they have had some civic achievements at this point in their lives.
Mm-hmm. This is purely anecdotal, but we run into a lot of people and know people who are in this generation. I am struck, and we hear news reports about how these people are having a real hard time making a living, that they have to have two jobs, maybe three jobs, that they're factoring in all kinds of things just to be able to live outside their parents' homes.
Well, and of course, many still have remained in their parents' homes for quite a period of time, although some recent data does suggest that finally there's enough economic progress, they're making enough economic progress to move outside the home. But you're right, they have had to work very hard working on two or three jobs that are maybe beneath their education.
Right.
To support themselves and to pay off their college loans in many instances. And yet, one of the great things about this generation is that you don't hear a lot of complaining from them, really. They're an optimistic generation. They think things will work out. They think they have the ability to turn things around. And so they will go out and do what is necessary to make ends meet and to achieve what they can achieve.
And why is that? Because they were told by their parents that they were great?
Well, I think, you know, we make jokes about that, but in fact, the generation was raised in a sheltered manner, and they were encouraged, let's say, by their parents. We talk about that frequently, you know, the winning of trophies for just showing up and that sort of thing.
Right.
But what that does do is create people who do have a sense of high expectations and then try to deliver on those expectations. So, you know, it may not have been a bad way to rear children.
Mm-hmm. What about those young people who really have been hard hit by the economic downturn? This report shows January statistics showing unemployment among 18 to 29-year-olds at 13%, which is high, and suggests that as many as 1.7 million millennial adults aren't even counted as unemployed because they gave up looking.
Well, you know, that's true, and certainly many members of the generation are suffering greatly, and there still is a divide within that generation between those who have had college experience, and that's at least half, and those who have not, and those who have not are particularly suffering. And so a lot of the focus, it's true, and it is on those who are in college, who have graduated from college, because they are in some ways more visible. But the non-college contingent here in particular is suffering, and particularly those who are in the lower age range of this thing, 18 to 24 group, rather than, you know, 25 to 30 or 31.
Mm-hmm. What about some of the events? We also, in our generations, have either world events or events that just define us, be it World War II, be it the Vietnam War. This generation has had to deal, as we all know, with 9/11 and then with horrendous violence that in schools, you know, these shootings that have taken place. What about that? What about that kind of violence that could affect, I would think, somebody's psyche?
I think it could. You know, one point before I really get to answering that question more specifically, of course, is that any group of people who are going through their youthful period, you know, for them, whatever bugaboos they have, and we all had them when we were growing up. I remember having to hide under my desk in school waiting for, I went to a school just outside of Washington, D.C., which would have been certainly a major target during the Cold War, and, you know, thinking that somehow ducking covering under my desk was going to save me from an atomic bomb.
Right.
And so, you know, we had our own fears to deal with at that point as well. But certainly this generation has seen some major events occur, obviously 9/11, and something, you know, while, for example, in the 1930s, there was some very lurid crime, a lot of gangsters roaming about the countryside. The mass shootings and the mass violence is something that does seem to be new. It's interesting, the crime rates overall and murder rates overall have actually gone down, but the murders that do occur sometimes tend to be more spectacular than they were in the past.
I wonder about, and you've written about this extensively, I remember when 9/11 happened that one of the first people I called was my dad, who was elderly at that point, and he had been watching television, and we talked about it on the phone for a good long period of time. Whereas my son, I think probably as soon as he was out of school, and the other boys in the family who are a little bit older, probably got on their cell phones right away and had a whole network of conversations with people. What about that? Put it in some kind of context. Does that make them more likely to be comforted, to understand events because they have this extraordinary technology?
Well, I think it can go two ways. Yes, I think it could work toward comforting. They can get together. And of course, since then, we have even a methodology of communication that's developed, texting, that would allow people to communicate much more freely and much more widely than even cell phones would have in 2001. And on the one hand, I suppose it does create the possibility of greater rumors going about and creating mass hysteria, but it also does permit people to compare notes, to try to encourage one another, and so on. So I think it could go either way, but I do think it has the potential of the new communication of actually allowing people to face their problems perhaps with others, and that's certainly something the millennials would like to do rather than just simply try to cope with it as individuals. That's one of the ways that millennials, in fact, do deal with stress, as a part of a group rather than as just individually trying to figure out how to do something on their own.
And that must be a good thing, to do it collaboratively, collectively.
Yes, I would agree with you. I think that is. Again, I think that's this generational type, or the millennial generational type, the civic generation, by definition, is group-oriented. And there's a joke that goes that millennials will text their friends in the morning to find out how they should feel that day. And I think there's a certain truth in that, but it does mean that they can collaborate, they can come up with solutions to their issues, their problems, rather than just figuring I've got to do it all on my own, which is something that baby boomers, members of Generation X, are more likely to do.
Well, welcome phone calls for our guests. We're talking about millennials and stress levels for Americans, for young Americans, which tend to be higher than the national norm, according to a recent survey, and we're talking about that this hour. The generation ages 18 to 33 are plenty stressed, and we see an increase in rates of depression and anxiety disorders. Nonetheless, I like the way that our guest has described this generation as a civic generation, in some ways comparable to the greatest generation. Would you agree with that? Would you agree that millennials are experiencing a bit more stress? Perhaps you're in that age group and you can talk about your stress, which might make you feel better. And what it is that defines this particular generation, and how we alleviate some of the stress for millennials. Our guest is Mike Hayes. He's co-author of Millennial Momentum, How a New Generation is Remaking America, and also Millennial Makeover, MySpace, YouTube, and the Future of American Politics. Phone number here, 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And you can also get a hold of us on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to your phone calls now, starting with Mike in Madison. Hi, Mike.
Good morning. Two quick comments. One on the economy for our generation, and the second on some moral responsibility for our generation. First off, on the economy, I think that we've had a really rough go of it, whereas our parents' generation grew up in a time of, the older parents were the baby boomers, and the ones slightly under that were still had that positive outlook, whereas I was told when I was young to go, when you finish college, you get a job with one company, and you stick with that company for the rest of your life. Which was great advice when we were young, but as we watched our parents, most of these corporations outsource jobs, and our parents lose their livelihoods, lose their homes, watch the economy slowly crumble here. So I think we had a really hard time in dealing with economic issues, just relating to specifically what I just said, and also the cost of living has gone up, whereas wage, and specifically Obama talking last night about raising minimum wage, Anybody that makes minimum wage currently knows how difficult it is to get by, and how housing costs and utility costs and everything has just grown so exponentially that pay really hasn't kept up with it. And to my other comment, then going towards the moral note, I think one of the positive things for our younger generation is, you know, when I was younger, if someone made a racist comment or something, not many people would have said something. You kind of ignored it. Whereas our current younger generation has no qualm about stepping up and saying, you know, that what you said was wrong, that's, you know, that's prejudice or racist or homophobic. I think we've come a long way socially versus our parents' generation. But all in all, I think for our generation, things are not going to get any easier. I think we're actually looking forward to seeing the economy almost collapse again, due to the baby boomer generation's just complete greed.
Thank you, Mike, very much for the call. Well, let's start with his job statement, because this is a whole new way of entering life. That he's right. Most of us thought that we would stay with a place for a long period of time, and now you don't. Your life is somewhat up in the air because you're going from job to job. Mike.
Yes. Well, I think. Actually, Mike made some excellent points there. And yes, certainly his generation is facing some very tough economic times. One of the great things is about this generation, though, is it has tended to be adaptive, and it is it has become a bit more cautious, perhaps, in a lot of ways, personal spending habits, things of that nature, than its parents. So it's a generation that is perhaps learning to live better within its means than, say, the baby boomers that he mentioned earlier. Millennials, I think, are doing their very best to avoid debt. They obviously, many of them, those who are going to college, have huge debts to deal with, average $25,000 to $30,000 a year when they finally graduate from college, but have been much more cautious about other kinds of expenditures. When I was growing up, I remember my parents, who were members of the GI generation, and all the caution, the saving, the kind of things that they would do, and we used to tease them about their depression mentality. Well, to some extent, we're seeing some of that with the millennials, and yet I think the optimism for the generation still remains. They still remain a highly optimistic, highly upbeat generation. Perhaps part of it is because they're young. They still feel that they have 40 or 50 years to get things right. And yet I also think they believe that they can make the changes. One of the things that they have done that has been very important in the way they have adapted to things is Mike also mentioned the kind of the civic activities that they do, the volunteering, the willingness to serve. And that, I think, is not only good for the community and good for society, but it does give them experience that they can use later in life.
And I liked his point. I think this is true, and we're seeing it in elections. And as you mentioned, with the number of young people who determine the presidency, of a more accepting generation, so that all of a sudden, we've seen great changes in how we view rights for people who are gay or people who are immigrants and not here legally, and how we make sure that we treat them decently. And the issue of race is something that many members, not all, but many members, I think, of this generation are much more advanced about than earlier generations.
That's most definitely true. The millennials are the most tolerant generation on virtually every social issue: immigration, gay rights, women's rights. In fact, if anything, this generation is certainly the most generation that has the least sense of sexual difference in terms of women's roles versus men's roles. To a large extent, they don't have any sense that there is such a thing as roles that are only assigned to women or those that are only assigned to men. And perhaps it's even the first female-driven generation in American history. A majority of college students, college graduates, even those in postgraduate education, professional schools, are in fact women now rather than men. So it is a generation that is very different in a lot of ways that Mike mentioned than earlier generations were.
Marty in Milwaukee, hello.
Hello. Good morning. Great topic. I have two millennials as children, and I want to take issue a little bit with the upbeat notion that the kids are congregating and are more social. I guess I'm concerned that social media may not stand in terribly well for the kind of primary contact and group building and that happens face-to-face. And I'm reminded of Robert Putnam's book, Bowling Alone. And I wonder if when times get really hard, if they do get really hard, if this is the same, if this group without extended family, with much less secure nuclear family, are going to pull together, or if they're going to be that last comment of the last caller, you know, it's the greed of the previous generation that's screwing them. I wonder if indeed this will be a supple, elastic generation that can respond to stress.
Well, it's a good question, and you know, of course, history will tell us what will ultimately happen. But so far, what we have seen with this generation, while it is true that a lot of the contact they have with others is on social media rather than face-to-face, it nevertheless, that is still, I think, for many, valuable contact. It's still a way of exchanging attitudes, exchanging beliefs and perceptions. And at least to whatever public surveys, public opinion surveys indicate, the generation is, in fact, highly optimistic. People do tend to operate more in a group setting, trying to figure things out, than has been the case for previous generations, which were driven by more their internal values. We'll see how it all works out, but I am optimistic about this generation. Again, going back to the GI generation, there was a sense back in the 1930s and in the 1940s that maybe they were going to be a little weak. They couldn't deal with issues. Remember, they had to start as kids before they became the war heroes, and there was some doubt about that. A lot of Army drill sergeants thought that the young men who went in were going to be a bunch of mama's boys and very weak, and it turned out to be exactly the opposite.
They were young kids when they went, weren't they? It's just remarkable. They were so young. There have been a couple descriptions of the baby boom generation as being greedy. Would you agree with that?
Well, I think that's probably a little bit too strongly a pejorative term. But since we're getting into how generations have been labeled, mm-hmm. one of the things, the way the baby boomers are the type of generation called, that the generational theorists call an idealist generation, and that means that they are driven by their internal values. They develop these values while they're young, and they try to put those values into force, and they aren't, so they're really worried about doing what they would see as the morally correct and right thing. Rather than looking at society as a whole. These are obviously broad generalizations, and not all baby boomers are like this, but many are. And so one of the reasons that we're having such gridlock in Congress may well be that the congressional leadership is actually made up of baby boomers right now who are unwilling and unable to compromise with one another on a variety of different issues. And, you know, certainly this is a generation, the baby boomer generation, that has been willing to, in the political sense and even in a personal sense, to spend a lot of money that maybe they didn't necessarily have. And will, I suppose, leave it to somebody else to try to deal with the aftermath.
Mike Hayes, our guest on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio this hour, co-author of Millennial Momentum, How a New Generation is Remaking America, a survey released earlier this week. The results thereof showed that the millennial generation, 18 to 33, is experiencing more levels of stress than people in other generations. What's the cause of the stress? What's really good about this generation? What are their successes and causes of stress is what we're talking about with Mike, and welcoming phone calls, 800-486-8655. Chelsea in La Crosse, hello. Chelsea? Are you there?
Hi.
Hi.
Taking my call.
Sure.
Well, I am 23 years old, and I am part of this generation that we're talking to, and of course I'm going to bring the conversation back to my career, which is obviously my number one concern right now. I just graduated with my undergrad, and I'm kind of at that crossroads. I've been, you know, doing serving industry-type jobs while I've been going to school and trying to pay off debt and building a savings, and now I'm, you know, hearing anecdotally, oh, this degree isn't quite worth what it used to be, and looking at even more education. It's intimidating to go into even more debt and wondering if it's even going to be worth it in the long run, and just kind of curious how my generation is kind of reacting to upper education, and if it's more better just to kind of jump into the career wise, because as the other caller was saying, we're not moving so much upwards in a business type setting, but rather we're, you know, jumping around job to job. And if it's more so beneficial to get that actual work experience and kind of work your way up, or am I just better to throw myself into some more school? What your comments would be about that.
What field are you in, Chelsea?
I am looking into media and communication, and looking into media production, kind of in any other spot, a lot of editing or any other portion of the production process. So
okay. Mike?
That's where I'm at right now.
Well, I'm certainly not, I don't think it would be fair for me to give you career counseling, you know, over the telephone. I can only say that, you know, what, first of all, in a very general sense, I still do not believe that the more education one, I believe that the more education one has in the long run, and that's not going to help you right now, the better off you will be. Unless we have a complete turnaround of what has been the fact for decades, for centuries, the more highly educated one is, the better their chances are at succeeding in life, at having a higher income, and so on. Although that may not that may vary from one field to another. But in the meantime, I would suggest continuing to work at it, continuing to try to get whatever kind of experience you can, internships, even if they're relatively low paid in your field, to the extent that you can find them, would be helpful. And if you can't find them easily in your field, then certainly I think just working and learning at the same time is not a bad idea. That's the best I can do, but I can't necessarily advise somebody in, you know, their own personal life at this point.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel high levels of stress, Chelsea?
I mean, when I choose to focus on it, yes.
Right. So just don't focus on it, right? And then everything will be okay. Well, thank you very much. All the best to you in the years ahead.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Chelsea. Our number, 800-486-8655. Charles in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
All right, how are you?
Just fine, thanks.
Good.
See, it's always kind of frustrated me, these labels, Gen X, Gen Y, millennial generation, seem to be applied to, I'm not even sure if they reflect, but they seem to be applied to generally people who are not people of color, mainly, in other words, mainly white people. I was thinking about that. It seems that there's a, you know, I don't even know if it's necessary to put a label on people of color who, you know, for ages have never actually had the opportunity to participate in the society where they could be labeled as Gen X, Gen Y, or millennial with some degree of, you know, identity other than the negative identities associated with being a person of color and poor.
And what makes you say that people of color are not identified as part of the millennial generation, Charles? You feel they're left out?
You know, it goes back to Gen X, I guess. I think it was you know, Nirvana and the grunge movement out of Seattle. I mean, that was a white thing. And
I see.
I just think of Family Ties. You know, that was the TV show was, you know, the one that was supposed to represent the expectations, the hopes of my generation, you know, wealth and, you know, selfishness and so forth. And there are never any people of color on that show, as far as I can recall.
Mm-hmm.
But I have yet to, I never hear people of color refer to themselves, just anecdotally, as, oh, I'm a Gen X, I'm a Gen Y, oh, I'm, you know, stressed out about living with the effects of 9/11 or, I mean, there are people of this generation who have gone to Afghanistan and Iraq who are of color. Their experience is completely different.
Right.
You know, they're gonna get out and not have an opportunity anyway.
Yeah.
At least white people do seem to have some. They can get student loans a lot easier. Let's put that. It's oversimplification, but no, that's my position.
All right. Thank you, Charles. Is this a white thing we're talking about, Mike?
No, and I think I understand his comments and. Just a couple of points. First of all, I think it's well taken. These broad labels like millennial and Generation X are just that. This isn't astrology. It isn't a matter of somebody being born under the sign of millennial or Generation X, and everybody born under that sign is exactly the same. But what generational theorists have noticed is that people born within particular age range, within a particular range of years, if you do survey research, you can find very real tendencies on how they think, how they behave. It doesn't mean that everybody in that group behaves a particular way, but it means that in general, people behave a certain way, think a certain way, even though there may be exceptions to that. And that's really what we are looking at. So, for example, with millennials, they tend to be, at this point, a Democratic, as in Democratic Party generation. Two-thirds of them identify as Democrats, but one-third are Republicans. So it isn't that they're all Democrats or anything of that sort. Now, as far as ethnicity goes, in fact, African-American and Hispanic millennials, they certainly have their own cultural attitudes that are shaped by their ethnicity. But if you look at the surveys and you look at data, they also think broadly and behave broadly, as do white millennials. There will be some differences, some variation, but the surveys do suggest the same kind of group orientation. In fact, Hispanic and African-American millennials tend to even be more upbeat and positive in their attitudes than white millennials do.
Mm-hmm. So this are all being in this together. We have a stronger sense of that now than we did in previous generations, that what Charles says is still present, but it's changing.
Yeah, I think, there are, within any generational group, there are ethnic differences. So we don't simply get rid of ethnicity within generational lines. But still, millennials are much more group-oriented regardless of their ethnicity. And you can see it, again, if you look at the voting statistics. Obviously, overwhelming numbers of African-American mm-hmm. and Hispanic millennials voted for Barack Obama. But he also did better, the president did, in his election campaigns among white millennials than he did among older white people. So there is still an age or millennial or generational effect that crosses ethnic lines.
Right. Will in DeForest. Hi.
Yes, thanks. I take issue with the term greatest generation because if you look through history, the times of World War II, the economics were different than it is now. And because of the stranglehold of the military-industrial complex, you have greed and decay in the moral values that have created the problem that we live in economically now. So the young people don't have a chance. And to believe in the false idea that we go and fight abroad to protect our freedoms while we're losing those rights at home is a problem. I coined a phrase in 2002 that the greatest generation is yet to come. It will be the generation that will refuse to go and fight so people can profit from war.
Mike.
Well, I guess, again, I could certainly take some exception. The phrase greatest generation, I would not... I don't want to take credit for it. We use that term. It's actually Tom Brokaw's term to describe that generation, simply because a lot of people, it's well recognized. I can only say that at least at this point, the millennial generation is obviously supplying most of the troops that are fighting in Afghanistan, that did fight in Iraq. They're most of the enlisted personnel in the military. And the millennial generation is, in fact, very supportive of the military. They do have a different point of view on foreign policy than other generations. They do tend to believe in a multilateral approach, working with other nations to deal with issues, rather than simply America going it alone. But they nevertheless are not isolationists. They do tend to support the military. I've seen surveys, for example, that ask millennials who the ideal employer would be, and while at the top of the list it's media companies like Disney and Google and Facebook, in the top 10 are also the CIA, the State Department, and organizations like that,
really?
Governmental agencies like that, which you certainly wouldn't have expected with a bunch of baby boomers back in the 1960s.
Huh. We have an email from Boyd, and perhaps you've answered it. Maybe you want to go on a little more with it, who asks, what is the generation's attitude toward government? Do they feel it has a place, or is there mistrust? It sounds from what you've said that they like it.
They do. They are, they, you know, in economic matters, they do tend to be favor activist government. In foreign affairs, they are not isolationists. As I said, they tend to be multilateralists, wanting to form alliances with other countries. And in areas of social issues, they tend to be very tolerant, so they would want to use the government to permit a greater expansion of gay rights, women's rights, immigrants' rights, things of that nature.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take more phone calls in a moment. Young adults are facing higher levels of stress than the national average, graduating during the Great Recession, one of the reasons for the stress, and they've grown up witnessing violence like 9/11 and the Newton shooting and other shootings. Our guest is Mike Hayes, and he's co-author of The Millennial Momentum, How a New Generation is Remaking America, and Millennial Makeover, MySpace, YouTube, and the Future of American Politics. I would say it's fair to say on the whole, generalizing here, but we do that every now and then. He is presenting a fairly positive view of this generation, although they are facing economic challenges and stress because of job uncertainty and lack of jobs at times. What do you think? 800-486-8655, and we'll be with you in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Next phone call, Ralph in Little Suamico. Hi, Ralph.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
I didn't know I was going to be on so quick. Thanks for taking my call. I have two sons that are in their 20s. They're both doing quite well. And so I'm not trying to diss the millennial generation, but most of the atrocities that have happened that are such stresses have been caused by millennials. I mean, most of the mass shootings and so forth were millennials. So I think you can kind of pick and choose whichever millennials you want to study. And if you look back at when I was in my 20s, I could say about the same thing for myself as what you're saying about millennials, that they were more Democrats, they were more optimistic, they were more social. I was all those things as well. As I got older, I changed.
Well, so what? So how are you now?
I'm more conservative.
Uh-huh.
I'm more cautious. I'm more skeptical than I was when I was in my 20s.
Uh-huh.
And I think that that's something that happens with age. So when you're looking at younger generations versus older generations, you have to consider that as people get older. And this is a fact. As people get older, they get more conservative.
Mike.
Well, two points worth making. And first of all, let me talk about the second thing that I believe his name was Ralph mentioned, and that's that people become more conservative as they age. In fact, the research on politics, political identifications, party identification, suggests that people form their party identification when they're young, and they're 18, in the range of maybe 18 to 25, 27 years old, and pretty much stick with it through the entirety of their lives. It is true that millennials do, as a group, again, two-thirds, not all, but two-thirds, do tend to see themselves as Democrats. The GI generation also came in during the Roosevelt years. They tend to see themselves that way. But not all generations start out as liberals. Generation X, which was a generation, the generation next oldest before the millennial generation, was born from 1965 to 1981, and it came of age as Ronald Reagan was president and actually was a very conservative Republican generation and remains that way even today. They're perhaps the most Republican generation of any generation, most conservative generation of any generation, particularly the oldest portion of that generation. So generations don't all start out the same. Even the baby boomers have this image of being the protest generation, this liberal generation. At the time of the Vietnam War protest, about half of the baby boomers were liberal and Democrat, and half of the baby boomers were conservative and Republican, and that generation remains divided to this very day. The baby boomers were the generation that gave us the gender gap. They were the first generation in which men and women thought and voted differently. It had never happened before, and it remains that way today. So that's the kind of the first point about this. Now, his comment about most of the atrocities are committed by millennials is true. Overall, the generation does tend to be a very well-behaved generation. Crime rates are way down. Really, all the negative social indicators tend to be down for this generation, out of wedlock marriage and so on. But one problem that a civic generation has when people cleave together and kind of think together and form opinions together, the outliers in that generation, and there are outliers, again, this is not astrology, do tend, if they can't break into the group, often tend to strike back in a very negative and violent way. So, I mean, his point is well taken, that many of the people committing the atrocities are millennials, and if nonconformists don't do well in eras when civic generations dominate. If you go back to the 1950s and 60s and look at things like McCarthyism, for example, that would be the case.
Thank you so much for the call, Ralph. Here's an email that has come in from Kayla in Milwaukee. I work at a university and I have a question about generational theory. Do you think the generation of your parents affect your tendency to fit or not fit the general old for your generation? For example, I'm a millennial and I notice some difference between myself, raised by Gen X parents, and my friends who were raised by baby boomers. Does that affect it?
That was a great observation. She is 100% correct. Generational theory is a little bit complex, and I couldn't go into all of it today. But basically, people are shaped by the way they are reared by their parents. And there are these four types of generations that recycle throughout American history because, in many ways, there are four ways of raising children. And if there's anything that we all agree on, it's that we can do a better job of raising our children than our parents did of raising us. And so there are these variations. And one thing we have found is that there are some differences in attitudes. While overall millennials do tend to be group-oriented regardless of who reared them, the younger millennials, who are more likely to be reared by Generation X, do tend to be a bit more cautious, a bit more inward in many ways than the older millennials who were raised by baby boomers. And there could be other differences, but I think her observation is very correct.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very astute observation, actually.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Kayla. Tom in Madison, hi.
Yeah, hi, Kathleen. I'd like to take issue a little bit with this comparison of the millennial generation with the so-called greatest generation. First of all, comparing this military experience is just completely off the wall. The greatest generation had no choice but to enter, you know, the World War II as a complete generation. The entire country was at war. It was a world war. Everybody was involved in one way or another, and any able-bodied person was at war. 1%, as your host said, have been involved with this Iraq war. There's absolutely no comparison. Number two, they haven't been around long enough to show us anything except attitude. So a lot of what he has mentioned has been a purely attitude. Okay, so they have a good attitude. But I'm not sure you can extrapolate anything from that. Much like some of the X and Ys, no generation since the Vietnam War generation has been exposed to any widespread national horrendous situation like the Vietnam War and the draft. Okay.
What about September 11th?
Pardon me?
What about September 11th?
A one day flying of planes into buildings is just simply not comparable one bit, because most people were not exposed to anything then except a bit of horror. But they personally were not exposed to anything. And that's, I think, if anything is essential to understand, that's one of the things. There's no skin in the game.
All right, Mike?
Well, I think, again, it's a good point. We don't know exactly how the millennials will turn out. I mean, he is right. It's, you know, all we know at this point, because the oldest millennial is about 30, 31 years old, we don't know how all this is going to work out. But we do have their attitudes, and attitudes do shape behavior. So we are seeing some aspects, again, it's very early in the game, but we are seeing some ways in which millennials have behaved, their voting behavior, that suggests the kind of generation this is going to be and what they are likely to accomplish. It is true that it's a good thing that we haven't had to totally mobilize society as we did during World War II, when essentially every able-bodied male was drafted, and when we put people who normally were not allowed to work in manufacturing jobs, women and some minorities, in the factories to get things done. But, you know, what we have seen with this generation is based on its attitudes, based on what we have seen so far, I tend to be very optimistic about how they will turn out. We, again, don't know. Even in terms of 9/11, it's an event that, while it certainly only impacted 3,000 people, at least, and their families, at least directly, it did impact society. Certainly it gave us, as a society, a sense that we are in a war situation, mm-hmm. that we are exposed to danger, that even in our domestic country, in the domestic part of the United States, we could suffer real grievous blows, and we've been willing to accept some degree of mobilization, TSA at airports, that we would not have been willing to accept had it not been for 9/11.
Thank you, Tom, so much for the call. How large is this generation?
It's the largest generation in American history. There are 95 million millennials today.
Oh, I didn't know that. Huh.
And at this point, in the last election in 2012, only two-thirds of them were eligible to vote, were adults. By the end of this decade, by 2020, all of them will be eligible to vote, and they will make up more than one-third of all American adults, so 36%. So it's going to be a huge generation. More than one out of every three people is a part of this generation. They're going to be able to have major influence on the way things go. And if they tend to retain their sense of relative unity, that'll even strengthen their hand.
Yes. Well, that'll have extremely interesting political ramifications, won't it?
Certainly. We have more or less forecast that it's going to lead to an era of some Democratic Party dominance and bigger governmental activity. We'll see if it all works out, but if you listen to the president last night, you can see where things tend to be going.
Yes. Amy in Appleton, hi.
Hi. One large thing that hasn't been mentioned is, to misquote, how do you keep millennials down on the farm when they've been given Ritalin? I mean, the educational process is kind of a fluke, even through college, with children taking drugs to study and perform.
Mike.
Well, I'm not quite sure I understand what the question was. Like, if she could.
Let's just fashion a question from it. Is this generation overly dependent on drugs like Ritalin to get through the educational experience?
Obviously there has been some increase in the use of such medications, but, you know, by and large, it isn't the entire generation that can't be tarred with that brush. And yet, what we see with this generation is, first of all, you know, better achievement, higher level of achievement in school, but also, again, a lot lower incidence of other social difficulties, such as crime committed, out of wedlock marriage, and things of this sort. So, and I think it does tend to be more the way they are reared by their parents with expectations for the kind of behavior that's expected of them, rather than simply a matter of being given medication to make them behave a certain way.
And what about the, we've strayed a bit far, which is great, from the survey. The survey showed that this generation is suffering more from depression and from anxiety disorders. Are we, as a society, in touch with mental illness here?
Well, that's a major concern. And again, I think it is, if there is a concern for this generation, it is the stress levels that it is because it is a generation with high expectations placed upon it and maybe having difficulty achieving some of those generations. But one of the things you will expect of a generation like this is, if in fact they do have the political power that it appears they are going to, is that society may come to better grips with mental health issues than we have in the past. And actually feel that it is a matter of society having to deal with these issues, which has not been the case for the last three or four decades.
Mike, I need to go end it here because we're out of time. Thank you so much for being with us. Mike Hayes, co-author of Millennial Momentum, How a New Generation is Remaking America. And we thank him for responding to the survey about millennials. Thanks for all your calls. You were really engaged in this. Thanks to Amanda Magnus and Katie Mattson for producing this program. Until tomorrow.